to serve as president of these states and people, I shall apply that lesson to the search for peace in Vietnam as to all other areas of national policy. Now let me ask you, do you remember these words at another time in a different place? Peace and freedom do not come cheap. And we are destined, all of us here today, to live out most, if not all, of our lives in uncertainty and challenge and peril. The words of a prophet, yes. The words of a president, yes. The words of the challenge of today, yes. And the words of John Kennedy to you and to me and to posterity. Last week, we witnessed once again in Czechoslovakia the desperate attempt of tyranny to crush out the forces of liberalism by force and brutal power, to hold back change. But in Eastern Europe as elsewhere, the old era will surely end, and there as here, a new day will dawn. And to speed this day, we must go far beyond where we've been, beyond containment to communication, beyond the emphasis of differences to dialogue, beyond fear to hope. We must cross those remaining barriers of suspicion and despair. We must halt the arms race before it halts humanity. And is this a vain hope? Is it but a dream? I say the record says no. Within the last few years, we have made progress. We have negotiated a nuclear test ban treaty. We have laid the groundwork for a nuclear non-proliferation treaty. We have reached agreement on banning weapons in outer space. We have been building patiently, stone by stone, each in our own way, the Cathedral of Peace. And now we must take new initiatives with prudence and caution, but with perseverance. We must find the way and the means to control and reduce offensive and defensive nuclear missile systems. The world cannot indefinitely hope to avoid nuclear war, which one rash act, one error in judgment, one failure in communications could unleash upon all humanity and destroy all of mankind. But the search for peace is not for the timid or the weak. It must come from a nation of high purpose, firm, without being belligerent, resolute, without being bellicose, strong, without being arrogant. And that's the kind of an America that will help build the peace of this world. But the task of slowing down the arms race, of halting the nuclear escalation, there is no more urgent task than ending this threat to the very survival of our planet. And if I am elected as your president, I commit myself, body, mind, and soul, to this task. Now our second reality is the necessity for peace at home. There is, my friends. Let's see it as it is. There is trouble in America. But it does not come from a lack of faith, but it comes from the kindling of hope. When the homeless can find a home, they do not give up the search for a better home. When the hopeless find hope, they seek higher hopes. And in 1960 and again in 1964, you, the American people, gave us a mandate to awaken America to its unmet needs. You asked us to get America moving again, and we have, and America is on the move. And we have awakened expectations. We have aroused new voices, and new voices that must and will be heard. We have inspired new hope in millions of men and women, and they are impatient, and rightly so, impatient now to see their hopes and their aspirations fulfilled. We have raised a new standard of life in our America, not just for the poor, but for every American, wage earner, businessman, farmer, school child, and housewife, a standard by which the future progress must be judged. Our most urgent challenge is in urban America, where most of our people live. Some 70% of our people live on 2% of our land, and within 25 years, 100 million more will join our national family. I ask you tonight, where shall they live? How shall they live? What shall be their future? We are going to decide in the next 4 years those questions. The next president of the United States will establish policies not only for this generation, but for children yet unborn. Our task is tremendous, and I need your help. The simple solution of the frustrated and the frightened to our complex urban problems is to lash out against society. But we know, and they must know, that this is no answer. Violence breeds more violence. Disorder destroys. And only in order can we build. Riot makes for ruin. Reason makes for solution. So from the White House, to the courthouse, to the city hall, every official has the solemn responsibility of guaranteeing to every American, black and white, rich and poor, the right to personal security. Life. Every American, black or white, rich or poor, has the right in this land of ours to a safe and a decent neighborhood. And on this, there can be no compromise. I put it very bluntly, rioting, burning, sniping, mugging, traffic in narcotics, and disregard for the law are the advance guard of anarchy, and they must and they will be stopped. But may I say most respectfully, particularly to some who have spoken before, The answer lies in reasoned, effective action by state, local, and federal authority. The answer does not lie in an attack on our courts, our laws, or our attorney general. We do not want a police state, but we need a state of law and order. We do not want a police state, but we need a state of law and order. And neither mob violence nor police brutality have any place in America. And I pledge to use every resource that is available to the presidency, every resource available to the president to end for once and for all the fear that is in our cities. Now let me speak of other rights. Nor can there be any compromise with the right of every American who is able and who is willing to work to have a job. That's an American right too. Who is willing to be a good neighbor, to be able to live in a decent home in the neighborhood of his own choice. Nor can there be any compromise with the right of every American who is anxious and willing to learn to have a good education. And it is to these rights, the rights of law and order, the rights of life, the rights of liberty, the right of a job, the right of a home in a decent neighborhood, and the right of an education. It is to these rights that I pledge my life and whatever capacity and ability I have. But we cannot be satisfied with merely repairing that which is old. We must also move beyond the enclosures of our traditional cities to create new cities, to restore our present cities, yes, and we must bring prosperity and modern living and opportunity to our rural areas. We must design an open America, opening new opportunities for new Americans in open land. I say to this audience, we have invested billions to explore outer space where man may live tomorrow. We must also be willing to invest to develop inner space right here on Earth where man may live today. And now the third reality. Essential if the other two are to be achieved is the necessity, my fellow Americans, for unity in our country, for tolerance and forbearance, for holding together as a family. And we must make a great decision. Are we to be one nation, or are we to be a nation divided? Divided between black and white, between rich and poor, between north and south, between young and old? I take my stand. We are and we must be one nation, united by liberty and justice for all, one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. This is our America. And just as I've said to you, there can be no compromise on the right of personal security. There can be no compromise on securing of human rights. If America is to make a crucial judgment of leadership in this coming election, then let that selection be made without either candidate hedging or equivocating. Winning the presidency for me is not worth the price of silence or evasion on the issue of human rights. And winning the presidency, and listen well, winning the presidency is not worth a compact with extremism. I choose not simply to run for president. I seek to lead a great nation. And either we achieve true justice in our land, or we shall doom ourselves to a terrible exhaustion of body and spirit. I base my entire candidacy on the belief which comes from the very depths of my soul, which comes from basic religious conviction, that the American people will stand up, that they will stand up for justice and fair play, and that they will respond to the call of one citizenship open to all for all Americans. So this is the message that I shall take to the people, and I ask you to stand with me. And to all of my fellow Democrats now who have labored hard and openly this week at the difficult and sometimes frustrating work of democracy, I pledge myself to that task of leading the Democratic Party to victory in November. May I say to those who have differed with their neighbor or those who have differed with a fellow Democrat, may I say to you that all of your goals, that all of your high hopes, that all of your dreams, all of them will come to naught if we lose this election, and many of them can be realized with the victory that can come to us. Now a word to two good friends, to my friends, and they are my friends, and they're your friends, and they're fellow Democrats, to my friends Gene McCarthy and George McGovern. To my friends, Gene McCarthy and George McGovern, who have given new hope to a new generation of Americans that there can be greater meaning in their lives, that America can respond to men of moral concern. To these two good Americans, I ask your help for our America, and I ask you to help me in this difficult campaign that lies ahead. And now I appeal to you, to those thousands, yea, millions of young Americans, to join us not simply as campaigners, but to continue as vocal, creative, and even critical participants in the politics of our time. Never were you needed so much, and never could you do so much if you were to help now. Martin Luther King Jr. had a dream. Robert F. Kennedy, as you saw tonight, had a great vision. If America will respond to that dream and that vision, if America will respond to that dream and that vision, their deaths will not mark the moment when America lost its way, but it will mark the time when America found its conscience. These men have given us inspiration and direction. And I pledge from this platform tonight, we shall not abandon their purposes. We shall honor their dreams by our deeds, now and in the days to come. I am keenly aware of the fears and the frustrations of the world in which we live. It is all too easy, isn't it, to play on these emotions? But I do not intend to do so. I do not intend to appeal to fear, but rather to hope. I do not intend to appeal to frustration, but rather to your faith. I shall appeal to reason and to your good judgment. The American presidency is a great and powerful office, but it is not all powerful. It depends most of all upon the will and the faith and the dedication and the wisdom of the American people. And I know, as you know, there is an essential strength in the American people. And tonight I call you, the American people, not to be of one mind, but to be of one spirit. I call you, the American people, not to a life of false security, false promises and ease, but to a new sense of purpose, a new dedication, and a new commitment. Remember that those who founded this republic said that in order to secure these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. I submit, my fellow Americans, we dare do no less in our time if this republic is to survive. So I call you forth. I call forth that basic goodness that is there. I call you to risk the hard path of greatness. And I say to America, put aside recrimination and dissension, turn away from violence and hatred, believe. Believe in what America can do, and believe in what America can be. And with the help of that vast, unfrightened, dedicated, faithful majority of Americans, I say to this great convention tonight, and to this great nation of ours, I am ready to lead our country.